You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This, to your great surprise, is yet again Matthew Raphael Johnson. Today is the 23rd of June, 2021. I don't know if I said this before, but I'm going to be speaking at the Freedom Palooza thing, which is what Pultipede and Poker Face put on in eastern Pennsylvania every year. 4th of July weekend, trying to make it into some kind of a right-wing Woodstock. My son and I went a couple of years ago. There'll be a group of us this time around. And anyone to support Poker Face, most of you know who it is, and many of you know who Paul is. If you guys can support him, just outside of Allentown, it's a campground, and of course they'll be playing, and there'll be speakers during the day. It's kind of a big deal. And I think this year is going to be a much bigger event. Last year, of course, we didn't have anything. So this is a always invite you to support Poker Face. There'll be a bunch of bands there, too. There'll be concerts both Friday and Saturday night. So I will be there. If you can't make it, I would appreciate your support, as I always do. Both on my own website, as well as the one at Radio Albion, you can support me financially, which, of course, I always desperately need. Because this stuff is a full-time job and can only be done by people who do this full-time. And that's proven by the fact I want to talk about things today that, again, part-time people can't do. Because of the complete demolition of the Western political and economic system, things that I've been saying for 20 years, 25 years, are now all coming true. People are looking for answers to not just basic political questions, but fundamental questions as to what all of these issues have in common. What underlies it all, and we have very few people capable of talking about this. Because of that, you have scam artists and idiots who know just enough of the vocabulary to make them sound like they have some sort of authority, but they don't. And they lead a lot of people astray. We don't have a whole lot of full-time scholars in this dissident movement, and that's very destructive. I'm one of the few, and of course I've been doing this now for 30 years. The good news, of course, is that people are actually looking for answers to not just issue-oriented questions, but when everything starts falling apart, people start asking even deeper questions. I'm going to talk about the slogan that you're going to get from political beginners. We'll use a phrase, something like, America is a republic, not a democracy. That's like, you know, your sophomore in high school kind of slogan. I wouldn't ask what they mean by that. They'll say it has something to do with the Constitution. I don't know why you couldn't enshrine democracy in the Constitution, but they usually don't go any farther beyond that. And of course, the two labels are generally meaningless. And of course, the Constitution doesn't have any foundation in our present society. The virtues, the economy, the corporate structure that existed in the late 18th century doesn't exist anymore. The Constitution was written for a tiny handful of highly educated, very aristocratic, what we would vaguely call today middle-class people, has nothing to do with the mass society that exists today. But when you study political theory full-time, you realize that the word republic really, professionally speaking, doesn't have any functional definition. But even serious thinkers use the word all the time. The typical middle-class Republican uses the word republic. But again, they usually don't go any farther than a Bill of Rights or some inherent limitations on state power. But that works for democracies too, of course. There were two forms of constitution. I said this many times. The one connected to the land empire. Assyria, Persia, Rome, Russia, Germany. The traditional land empires in their very specific way of functioning. And the sea-based empire. Tyre, Carthage, Venice, Great Britain, United States, and even Japan, 19th century onward. Now, it's a simple typology, but it's pretty important. The sea-based empire are the only ones that have a republican system. The republican system is essentially the governing structure for a trading mercantile society. Society based on formal legal equality. Really, because the only thing that matters is making money, and money being the only worthwhile variable in social life. So, since anyone can do that, anyone can make money, it has no use for a monarch or any kind of aristocracy. Thomas Jefferson tried to define it many times, and he went back and forth like he always does. But one of the central concerns he had, you could have a republican system can't exist with any institutional ties of dependence. He thought America, again, late 18th century, was different from elsewhere because there was so much land that anyone could really become a landowner. Once you became a landowner, you grow your own food, you had your own community around you, you had your own stake in society, you weren't dependent on anybody, you didn't have the grid like you have today, and there alone could you become a free man. The only free man for him is if you were a property owner, a middling property owner. You didn't have to depend on anybody else for your income. Now, if you worked in a factory, if you were a sharecropper, something like that, you couldn't be a free man. You're not free because you're dependent on someone for your livelihood. You have to watch your behavior, your opinions. You're working for someone else all the time. You don't have much time to really develop your own ideas. If you piss someone off, you lose everything. So the person is not free. And their opinion doesn't matter. So using Jefferson's definition, today, of course, almost nobody is free. Now, that might be useful, but I don't think it has any connection to republicanism as such. I spent many years deconstructing the idea of a republican system. And normally now, I'm usually referring to relatively small trading societies owned by or run by oligarchies. An oligarchy, of course, is a system of domination. The only thing that matters is control of money and credit. The people who own money and credit could be anybody. So there are no real standards except being able to monopolize cash. But they'll use the rhetoric of freedom and constitutionalism and equality before the law. And all they're doing is justifying their own property and domination of everything else. The republics that we're referring to, someone talks about a republic versus a democracy. They have their roots, of course they have their roots in the ancient world. But for our purposes, they have their roots in the Renaissance. I've spoken about Renaissance Florence many times. And people like me who are partisans of the Byzantine Roman Empire of the Middle Ages, the archetypal land empire that has loyalty and virtue, which are central to those ideas. The opposite, of course, acquisitiveness and egocentrism, which is what a trading society would value over all things. But Venice and Florence during the Renaissance are societies that reached the absolute zenith of what a republic is. proud of their so-called freedom, had an industrious population. But of course, success is defined entirely in financial terms. Or, putting it differently, being able to translate money into political power, respect, or prestige. Many years ago, I did several lectures on Venice and Florence, precisely in this area. So Venice, around the turn of the first millennium, from that point to their decline in early Enlightenment, Venice, of course, is really the archetypal oligarchy. They're able to buy their independence from the Pope of Rome. They had their own patriarch. And I've done them many years ago. I talked about the marriage of the sea. The marriage of the sea being the central ritual of Venetian oligarchy and the Republic in general. It was done in the Feast of the Ascension, which has just passed. It was done at 12 noon, specifically the marriage of the Doge, or the central political figure, with the Adriatic. And I've said this before, but the ritual of the marriage of the sea is a central concept of what the old trading city is all about, what the Republic is really all about. And this is, in fact, what we might even call their constitution. But in reality, of course, that's not really a constitution. Isn't a piece of paper. Constitution is a set of traditions, customs, the basic consensus that form the social and political mentality of a given society. That's what a constitution is. Some of it might be written down on a piece of paper. That's just an abbreviation. The constitution isn't what's on paper. The constitution is the tradition that feeds into that written material in the first place. I mean, the American Constitution doesn't really say very much. The Anti-Federalists ripped the Constitution to shreds. It was so brief, it really didn't say anything, and everything is very vague. But something like the marriage of the sea, when you try to understand republicanism, you can't get any better than this. It's a true symbol of the whole Venetian Republican, the idea of the capitalist self-idea. That's how they've understood themselves. It is an occult ritual. Had a full blessing of the papacy in Rome, Alexander III. And he gave his blessing to this to maintain Venice as an ally. And it is a part of Venetian culture. Now, the concept of the sea is considered the concept that is very feminine, the idea of the chaotic. It's a chaotic and oppressive force. So a civilization is meant to put control over this. Science, mathematics, etc. The chaos can represent the population who need to be controlled. But in this case, it also means the ocean. The Adriatic, the Mediterranean, the Atlantic, seen as untamable, the chaotic elements. And Venice is tiny. Venice is only a handful of small islands. Therefore, the entire concept is the domination of the sea. The land, there's not much land there. It was a ritual to dominate the sea, both in the sense of dominating chaos, as well as the population, as well as people, as I've said before, like the Slavs. The Slavs from the Balkans, of course, the Slavic and the Balkans were always at war with Venice. They were considered identical to the sea. They were chaotic, uncivilized barbarians that needed to be controlled. So this is how they ritualized their domination over the ocean, but how they ritualized their domination over those they viewed as inferior. So the way the Venetian Republican idea is understood, and all the Republican idea, I mean, this is nothing specific to them, but they just gave it a ritualized form. It's control over the natural world. Venice had a very precarious geographic position, completely surrounded and dominated by water. And the idea is, you know, taming the untamable. So this ritual was absolutely essential to everything that they understood themselves to be. Dominating nature as well as so-called primal people. The whole notion of colonization. Um, in broader terms, of course, this, what the Republican, what the mercantile mentality understood itself to be, was to impose regularity and control over those things that were considered to be chaotic, really the natural world as such. Now, ships will go out in this ritual, and a ring would be thrown into the water. That was a symbol of the marriage between Venice and the sea. The ship was rowed. It was not sailed. It was rowed by a handful of very elite sailors. And it was very explicit that these sailors represented slaves. So the ship of the Venetian state was put in motion by slavery. It's very clear in the ritual itself. It's not that nature is chaotic necessarily. If nature was chaotic, you couldn't row anywhere. The rowers represented slaves, and the ship the Venetian state proves the republicanism, the entire mercantile idea, is based on unfree labor. And it's a normal part of the Republican order. Now, usually the Patriarch of Venice was on board. And of course, it's an occult ritual, and it refers to the domination of the mercantile mentality over those who rejected it. Pagan symbols were, you know, flags all over the ship. The four symbols of justice, earth, sea, and peace. The marriage of the earth and sea, the marriage of stability, represented by gnosis, the domination of the world, the oligarchy, and the sea, which is everything else, will eventually lead to peace, and therefore to justice. It should also be noted that one of the most visible symbols here was the Egyptian Sphinx. This is all part of this ritual. There were far more of these pagan symbols than there were Catholic symbols. And of course, as I said, the only reason the papacy supported this was that it meant that Venice would continue to finance the papacy. That Venice would not turn against it. So the symbols of the earth and the sea were marrying each other, justice and peace, also coming together. And this was a solemn ceremony overseen by the Egyptian Sphinx. Of course, the ship represents the state. And then the four colors, or the three main ones, was red, white, and blue. And these were the dominant ones in the flags, everything else. And of course, purple. Purple is a synthetic color. It's not a primary color. It is a symbol of control. Now, the Venetians didn't believe in royalty. That would be the negation of the Republican idea. It's a non-primary, at the time, a fairly rare color, only found actually in the sea. Now, of course, they did accept royalty, but just not the traditional Christian idea. There's only one monarch to them, and of course, that's money. In esoteric terms, of course, is Lucifer or Prometheus. And of course, the interaction of silver and gold, electrum. Gold is the alchemical symbol of the sun, rationality, masculinity, the domination over the ignorant. Silver is a domination of the moon, the sea, of woman. Everything is changing and flowing all the time. So the marriage of the sun and moon is the alchemical doctrine of absolute dominance over the elements, or that which is unchanging, represented by the sun, infused with that which is constantly changing, or the moon or silver. It's the will of the oligarchy, having absolute dominance over everything. And the statement says, "We wed thee, O sea, as a token of our perpetual sovereignty," is the key element in this sacrament. But the wedding at the sea is not really an equal contract. Wedding the sea means that now the Venetian oligarchy, represented by the ship and all the symbols, now has absolute dominance and ownership over those elements which are considered chaotic, which is why the ship is rowed by slaves, or people pretending to be slaves. So the worker, the common man, represented by the Slavs, the Vikings, Nordics in general, are savage and ignorant. So the wedding is about the navy controlling anyone who opposes the oligarchy. This is the mentality, as many of you heard the phrase, the black nobility. Black in the sense that it's a shadow, not an actual nobility. It attaches itself to the actual aristocracy of Europe and elsewhere, but it's not an aristocracy, it's an oligarchy. For Aristotle, oligarchy and aristocracy are opposites. One is controlled based on virtue, nobility, and experience. The other is controlled on money and deviance. The black nobility means that these are the shadow, the dialectical opposite of the actual real nobility of Europe. And the city itself refers to what the oligarchy referred to as freedom. The complete opposite of life on the land or of nobility. Studying ancient occult symbolism, there's something about the concept of the city. The city is always the home of divinity. Divinity refers to the Gnostic will that imposes its power on those inferior to it. The home of the god is the exact same thing. But in Greek mythology, it's where you deposited your money. The city is also a symbol of evolution, in the traditional sense of the term. Evolution has been around as long as there has been civilization, urbanization. Even Plato makes reference to it. The synthesis is between ambition and magic. Continued interaction with those that we conquer will create a new super race. The city was founded through death and murder. Could be, whether it be Romulus or the murder of Abel, with Cain going on to build the city. All the ancient traditions of stories of cities coming into existence, they all came into existence because someone was killed. And the blood of the murder victim was used to create, it was a seed to create the civilization. So the concept of the city is everywhere, at least in the Western occult tradition. The city as urbanization is the very definition of modernity. Now, of course, you know, the concept of the sea is not necessarily chaotic in the sense that we might use the term. It's exoteric. The European concept of the sea symbolism refers to the overcoming of barriers. It's not really a barrier if you have a powerful navy. It's not chaotic in that we know that there are natural causes that have an effect on the sea. The sea wasn't chaotic, but people were. The sea is also the collective subconscious of the population. It represented the secrets that were hidden in the mass mind, formless, in motion. Well, that's not the same thing as saying that it was purely chaotic. The sea, of course, was really the definition to the development of the world state in the Venetian mind. Maybe even in Roman sense, it may be the road. But for seafaring people, it was the sea. It was much easier to travel by sea than over land. And so the Venetian ritual here is a synthesis of the sea and the city. And that synthesis is the ship. The ship is bringing things together. The ship is the concept, the third entity in dialectical motion. It has on the marriage of the city and the sea and silver and gold. But the ship is the entity that brings all of it together into a single oligarchic unit. Integration and domination. Ritualization that ultimately trade, money, and power will rule the world if it doesn't already. So empires like Germany, Russia, Byzantium, China will be destroyed. Then Britain, America, Japan will rise in their place. And the ship is also an ancient symbol of expansion. Because back then, of course, you could travel long distances in a fairly short period of time. It's like nature doesn't exist anymore. The faster the ship, the more technology and forced labor that goes into the building of the ship, the more nature then seems irrelevant. The ship means that your typical, you know, things like people and size, these quantities no longer matter. If you control the seas, you control everything. Yours is only a handful of you. And so they are inventing the concept of international banking. And they realize that whoever has the fastest ships will automatically be dominant economically. And it's not really the size of the navy, certainly the army, but how strong your scientific establishment is. And this is where the Renaissance came into its own. Nature is not a barrier if you can control it. Nature is not something to be worked with, not to be venerated, not to be loved, but to be utterly dominated. And that is the nature of republican government. It has nothing to do with government as such. It has to do with science, technology, trade, money, the worship of dead matter. And God's nowhere to be found, of course. It's about the will, the will of the elite imposing itself on the world. All this is, you know, rhetoric about equality before the law, individual rights, the free market. All this, of course, means nothing. Even Jefferson, by the beginning of the 19th century, already had nothing but negative thoughts about where the U.S. was going, because Alexander Hamilton's idea was going to win. If that wins, then there is no republic. If Jefferson could define a republic as that concept of freedom, mutual freedom and non-dependence, of course, is a complete negation of the Venetian idea, but very hard to maintain. And Jefferson's very pessimistic. Jefferson may well have viewed the U.S. as a land power, which is viewed in central, his idea being that every rational citizen had access to land and private property, which would make them free. And as he became an old man, before his death, he realized that the experiment had failed, that banks and empire are going to dominate the purchase of land and capital equipment, that once the banks dominate these, private property is now gone. They'll only be property of the financiers. The Hamiltonian Federalists were going to win and impose their bank on everyone. That was the end of it. So if you understand the republic or private land ownership in Jefferson's sense, the very opposite of the marriage of the sea ritual, that's our definition of a republic. And therefore, maintaining this kind of independence relative to the state and to one another can't coexist with the Venetian idea or the Hamiltonian idea. So it may well be that the early experiment that Jefferson was talking about was really lost in the revolution of the banks, of course, what happened after the Civil War, the massive expansion of the state, and now a centralized empire. Now, that's the concept of the, as I mentioned many times before, the concept of the marriage of the sea. And what this is really the very nature of republican government. Jefferson was very eccentric. America was different because of how much land was here and how few people were on it. The Indians were extremely few, had no civilization worthy of the name, and the land was pretty much free. But that is not the idea of the Renaissance in northern Italy, which is where the republican idea was formulated. There, of course, land is at a premium. In some place like Venice, you had very little land in the first place. Now, Florence became another symbol of this because it was taken over by the Medici family. And as I've said before, Savonarola was your opponent of this takeover. So it was, you know, Lorenzo and Piero de' Medici on the one hand, and Savonarola and the medieval idea on the other. And this is really where the modern mind comes from. That's not that different from Venice. The Medici banking family took over Florence. They took over in de facto sense. They took over this, they ruled it directly. And not only is this the very definition of now the republican idea, but also the very concept of modernity. Now you go to your textbooks and they'll tell you that the Renaissance was about the rebirth, the ideas of Greece and Rome, which is completely false. First of all, Greece and Rome were very much alive in the Middle Ages. They were the fundamental mentality of the Middle Ages was Greco-Roman. Now rather what we're talking about here, the Renaissance is a justification of materialism and the domination of the banks. The Medici banking clan created the ideology, the science, the art that we call today the Renaissance of North Italy. Savonarola was a Dominican monk who eventually was murdered by the Medicis. And the Pope of Rome at the time, of course, being a creature of the Medici clan. And it's no different than a situation where you have elections completely controlled by, Goldman Sachs. Now, Donald Trump was this exception because he had his own money. And it frightened the hell out of the regime. He was too politically inexperienced. And, you know, this was so much larger than even his money can control. But other than that, this is the nature of Republican systems. The Medici family created this system, and it's a pattern of domination. And how the Medici family dominated their control of the Florentine state, and therefore the Renaissance, the idea of republican government, and the idea of modernity in general. Savonarola and the Medicis were at war over what became known as republican system and republican oligarchy. And so much of our intellectual, you know, concepts that we use today comes from this same battle. So Lorenzo Medici really had one political agenda. It was to have people think that their control over the city was not real, because the old republican systems continued to function. He controlled them from the background. The traditional institutions continued to function, just, you know, secretly functioned the way he wanted them to. Now, the modern banking clans derive from the Rothschilds, but they couldn't have existed without the Medici Medici pattern that they laid down, how bankers could dominate society while keeping it secret. Now, of course, the Medicis had no claim to any control over anything. They dominated the state while functioning, including the major guilds of the society were controlled from behind the scenes. But the Republican theory, the way it was defined at the time, the manipulation of the theory by the Medicis and their apologists, that's what justified their rule. They developed this idea that the possession of money equals personal professional success. This is where this comes from. Therefore, having this kind of professional success means you must also have an extraordinary degree of knowledge. You rule us because you have money. But it doesn't stop there. We have money because we have superior knowledge and abilities. And this kind of financial acumen is how we control the government, and even in their mind, how it's justified. The Medicis dominated Florence and financed all the artistic and scientific theories of the era. Michelangelo to Galileo, all of these people on the Medici payroll. The public speeches at the time of the Medici domination were in front of the government palace in Florence, and all free citizens were required to attend. It was a form of propaganda, no different than modern news media. Of course, they were all pro-Medici speakers and all free citizens. Any citizen that had the ability to serve in office had to go. This is not freedom. This is exactly what the Republican system is. Now, the Medicis laid out a pattern of rule in the modern world, running the state de facto, but not de jure. They hired an army of professional lawyers and bureaucrats, hired for the sake of manipulation and the inversion of the traditional laws of the state. And they used all kinds of, you know, philosophical subtleties to justify it and shame anyone who disagrees. And they tried to use, you know, Plato, but they completely inverted him. They had to completely invert the definition of philosophy for their own sake. You know, philosophy means love of knowledge, and knowledge meant the manipulation of matter for the sake of their selfish interests, the very opposite of knowledge. Concentration of material wealth and their family for the sake of controlling not just Florence, but all of North Italy, and everything that ran the financial strength in Britain and France, wherever they can go. The French monarchy had reneged on their debts, and because of this, there was a war between the Medici clan and the French crown. And this is one of the sources of their hatred of monarchy. Monarchs, at least back then, were still more powerful than banks. And the age of absolutism was going to follow directly from this. The bankers, the Medicis, and their successors throughout the world. Absolutism means the dominance of the state over everything, allegedly. The destruction of corporate liberties and the creation of what we may vaguely term totalitarianism, which, of course, the state could not exist at the time, with the state controlling all aspects of political life. So the Medicis had this idea that they were going to be controlling society as if they're Platonic guardians. But that's the opposite of what Plato thought the guardians were supposed to be. Well, Florence came out of the Black Death, 1380s, 1390s, to the beginning of the 15th century, really. The Medici set them up in the set themselves up, viewing themselves as the wise people who were going to bring the country out of this destruction. This, of course, is nothing what Plato ever thought, but they tried to use that agenda. They had this secret, the schools of magic and alchemy, which they financed, in the creation of this alchemical idea of so-called turning lead into gold, which is not what that meant. The Philosopher's Stone is actually money. Alchemy is not turning lead into gold. The manipulation of the masses from their leaden state, supporting someone like Savonarola, into their golden state, or supporting their interests. The golden people accepted dominant, you know, the current regime. The enlightened people, the cognoscenti, those who rejected them were followers of Saturn, the ignorant, the obtuse, us. Remember, the Medicis elected at least two popes. The papacy at the time was financed by the Medicis. You couldn't become a pope unless you had a Medici money and could buy the office. So whatever apostolic succession they had was broken, had been broken long before that, but most certainly it was broken now. Kinds of merit in the Republican system at the time meant you had the approbation of the Medici clan. Money was the same thing as merit, same thing as knowledge. Knowledge became the manipulation of matter for the sake of the oligarchy. It was the beginning of the scientific revolution. Even Galileo himself was financed by them. Now, Savonarola, the leader of the Christian medievalist counter-revolution against the Medici oligarchy, the very end of the 15th century. He was a charismatic preacher, a Dominican, and was absolutely at war with his institutionalized deceit. That became, we now know, was the Renaissance. Medici control over Florence is extremely similar to our situation today, situation in Plato's era in Athens. Of course, you know, there was no actual Renaissance. It was the rise of the Medici clan using things like alchemy, materialism, and deceit to justify their rule. That's what the Renaissance is. Therefore, anyone to be in resistance to the regime now has to understand who Savonarola was. Now, he was not an Orthodox man, but he was a medievalist man. He used basic medieval ideas as a cudgel against modernity, which was in its birth pangs at the time, and the control over banks, over the state, which is what modernity is. He starts with the idea that when a Medici or one of his supporters talks about the idea of personal liberty or individualism, which is just developing then, there's justifying the rule of the wealthy and the powerful. Talking about individualism and talking to poor people doesn't make any sense. Because as individuals, poor people don't matter. They only matter unless they're part of a guild. The only people who matter as individuals in this system are Lorenzo de' Medici. If you want to somehow liberate the individual from custom or tradition or religion, all you do is enshrine oligarchy. Because their individualism, from the perspective of money and political power, means a lot more than a poor man's individual. You know, the ego of Warren Buffett is a hell of a lot more powerful than my ego. That means personal liberty is just a code word for the domination of the rich and powerful. And Savonarola viewed himself as one of the Old Testament prophets, calling back Western Christianity to what was, you know, what little was left at the time. Remember, the Medicis, like the Venetian oligarchy, these were open pagans. Of course, they financed churches and monasteries, but that was a sham. They're also financing alchemy. They believed in the domination of that which was material over everything else. And the life of the spirit should be redefined as the interest of, in the interest of the material. The material is the base. Everything else is just the superstructure. Savonarola's idea was that Christianity is long since dead in Florence, and that paganism is the worship of money, which you saw with the Old Testament prophets too. Now, Christ has gone from Florence, and the pagan Bacchanal reigns supreme. In the Medici mind, Apollo and Dionysius are the same person, philosophically speaking. They're two aspects of the same thing. So Apollo with reference to geometry, the creation of cities, creation of economics and natural science, and Dionysius, or Bacchus, the ritualization of that power through alcohol, in-group sexual contact. One is the creation of power in the city. The other is ritualization of that power. It's really the same idea, especially as it manifested itself in Florence. Savonarola really demanded nothing short of it simply giving away their money. Luxury is not going to help them. It's not going to help the city. Luxury only helps them. It's only a ritualization of their power. Now it's being done openly. The moral and religious good of a people, of course, is essential. Everything else has to be built on that foundation. The worst thing in the world to say to a community is that personal interest should be supreme, which is an absurdity. When you say that, it means the private interests of those who already have money then are justified. They're the only ones who make any difference. If you say that individualism is proper, you say that those whose individuality matters more than you are now justified. There's no way out of that. So the worst thing for Savonarola was the idea that these oligarchic families throughout North Italy controlled the papacy and would finance different papal candidates, and that the candidate with the most money would then win the office. So being a monk, he still said the Church of Rome now was a Babylonian prostitute. Doesn't matter how Catholic you may be, there's no justification for what the papacy had become. Leo X and his successor were not just financed by the Medicis, but actually were Medicis themselves. Alexander VI is no different than not a Medici. He was created by them. So the Roman Curia became a bacchanal, having nothing to do with the Christian faith whatsoever. And again, that's no different today. And this papacy will eventually assault, torture, and murder Savonarola personally. If we're going to be consistent here and understand what the papacy is, and really the modern episcopacy really might have where you go today. There's a church and a pope that has full control over it. The pope is not part of that church. He dominates it. He's above the law. He's above emperors. He's above, in fact, everything. He's the very speaker, the spokesman, the manifestation of God on earth. Now, if you take that seriously, then the personal behavior of the popes has absolutely nothing to do with their authority. And that's where Savonarola drew the line. Had the conciliar movement of the 15th century been accepted in one form or another, then criticisms of Savonarola a little later, had they been heeded, there would have been no Martin Luther. There would have been no Reformation. Had the conciliar principle, the idea of a general synod governing a council with the Pope at its head, came to rule Western Christendom, there would have been no Anglicanism. No Lutheranism, there would have been no Calvinism. And the chances of a rapprochement between the Eastern and the Western Church would have been possible. Especially since, with the exception of Russia, the Eastern Church was under control of the Turks. But still, the possibility remains. The conciliar movement in Savonarola was, in a certain way, the successor of the conciliar movement. Had they won, rather than the pure absolute papacy, there would have been no Reformation. So eventually he attacked the papacy and the College of Cardinals, not because he disagreed with the institutions. I guess he vaguely accepted the idea of the papacy, but they weren't apostolic. You can't claim that Donatism is a problem here. That doesn't help anybody. Donatism is an abused idea. It does not justify a poor behavior. You can't hide behind it. Savonarola didn't have a counter-argument, except for the conciliar movement, against the papacy being personally wealthy and living a life of a bacchanal. Of course, in the Orthodox Church, we have this today. Bishops worth millions of dollars. You saw this many people. Philip Saliba, the Antiochians in America, was like that. Where did this money come from? So people like Pope Alexander at the time spent a lot of time wondering what they can get Savonarola for. They couldn't get him on doctrine. Um, But Alexander VI threatened to put the whole city of Florence under interdict if they didn't hand him over, because he was very popular, of course. He identified the Medici clan for what they were. He identified materialism for what it was. The worship, control, and domination of caste over everything. And, of course, the worship of those who have it. At least Lorenzo de' Medici wanted to maintain the facade of Republic in Florence, but his successor, Piero, wanted to get rid of the facade and just rule as a direct banking dictatorship. And that's how far the arrogance had gone at this point. The one thing that came to save Savonarola is 1494, Charles VIII of France took Florence. And the Florentines had their banking control and thrown in their lot with the corrupted papacy, and as a result, invited the invasion of France and North Italy. Savonarola was very disappointed in the behavior of the Medici, of Charles's men. But then, of course, he said, just like the Old Testament prophets did, that the invasion was justified. They deserved this kind of destruction. It's recompense for their oligarchic, horrible, almost dictatorial behavior over the people of this part of the world. Just like we do all the time, Savonarola confronted the Medici clan, liars and fakes that were preaching the idea of liberty of conscience, liberty of science, which is where this all came from. And of course, this was nothing more than a prostitution for materialism. But that's what these ideas are for in the first place. These ideas, these abstractions, were never abstractions. These ideologies directly derive from the Medici family. They're not goods in and of themselves. Liberty of conscience only matters to those who are powerful enough to make that liberty significant. But maintaining the facade of this abstract liberty, keep the offices elective, but the only reason that matters is they know who's going to get elected. Keeping the media in private hands is meaningless, since those who control it are the only ones who can benefit from it. So that's the very core of modernism. This is what republicanism is. It can't exist in any other way. There is no such thing as a pure freedom of conscience. Because at any given moment, you're going to have an oligarchy ruling it. The Renaissance is nothing more than the papering over the fraudulent Western cognoscenti. The fact that the modernity was created by the domination of a banking financial class over the political and economic world of Europe. But remember, these ideas, you know, freedom of speech, freedom, these were never meant to be anything other than facades for oligarchy. There is no pure version of any of this. It never existed. It can never exist. It came into existence to give the impression that it was this, you know, abstract idea, knowing full well you can't have a situation like this with purely. It doesn't exist. Someone always has to have this power, and then therefore once they have it in the private sector, they will condemn any public sector attack on it, which is exactly what happens now. Independent media just means media controlled by oligarchs. It's almost inconceivable to see what that would be like in a pure sense. We'd have a deconstructed, decentralized media everywhere. Eventually, it's going to become centralized somewhere. We're talking about 500 years of this. And this is the destruction of Western Christendom. And, of course, the building of Protestantism, which is nothing more than taking this into its most extreme direction. The entire thing is fraudulent. The entire language is fraudulent. Savonarola knew he was going to be killed, as Socrates was, as Christ was. You can't stand for liberty of conscience. That doesn't make sense. You can only stand for the truth of the matter. Doesn't matter. You know, freedom of speech only matters if you're speaking the truth. The only people who stand for abstract freedom are those who already have it and control it. Your freedom of speech doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is the truth of the case. The Medicis created this language. Freedom of conscience only mattered when they were in full control of it in the first place. There was never a time where you had no central power and this orderly manifestation of all of these freedoms. They came into existence, the language came into existence to completely dominate to justify the domination of those who already had this power. There is no abstract, you know, freedom of speech or freedom of conscience. That's never existed. The truth exists. But to stand by these abstract freedoms doesn't make any sense. You can't stand by freedom of speech because you're being censored. Because these people would say the same thing if they were in our position. In fact, they have. No, the only thing that matters is the truth of the case. We're being censored because we speak the truth, not because of some abstract freedom or some abstract objectivity which can never exist. The truth is not that difficult to come to. But understand, the Republican idea of these abstract freedoms exists only to justify their rule. There's only the truth. You may say the difference between a land power and a sea power is just that. The difference between talking about abstractions that cover over the domination of one group or another versus the fact that there's the truth. Socrates' whole thing was that there's the forms, the reality, the truth of Athens had long since disappeared, and therefore they were separate from the day-to-day life of the society. That's what the forms were. There was never any concept of freedom of expression. That's meaningless. Only the truth matters. And freedom of expression never had any connection with finding the truth, as John Stuart Mill would say later. You know, I don't stand by freedom of speech. I don't stand by freedom of expression. I don't stand by freedom. The truth is the only thing that matters. If you're being censored, the only reason you're being censored is that you frighten somebody. But you only frighten somebody if you're speaking the truth. Now, there's a lot of idiots out there, many people who should be censored. But there is no abstraction of freedom of speech. The whole point of this is that when the banking clans took over, whether it be Venice or any place in North Italy, Florence, they created this language. They created these abstract freedoms to make it seem like they were standing for this universal truth, when in fact it was only their self-justification. In the past, I've also talked about St. Maximin the Greek coming directly out of the Italian Renaissance, and of course coming to Russia. And he was quite aware of all of this. This is something that doesn't come up really in the English language or literature of this man. And St. Maxim was aware that this so-called Renaissance was about magic, alchemy, and astrology. And was aware that people use the word science, they're not really sure what they mean. At the time, both Western and Eastern Europe, science referred to the connection of the Kabbalah to some version of Plotinus's metaphysics. Maxim the Greek was a Renaissance scholar, but he rejected the Renaissance just like Savonarola. The regime never quite knew what to do with people like him, because he spit on the concept of this linear development of history, which is so central to the Western understanding. And everything that the Republican system does is based on manipulation, is based on inversion, and control over everything from journalists to historians to everything else. So, dealing with the liberalism that came out of republicanism and came out of oligarchy, they may refer to abstractions and freedom of the press, etc. And the first question you need to ask, of course, what are you going to do with it? And if you say, well, this is the best way for truth to be known, of course, it's ridiculous. It assumes that people actually care about the truth and that people know enough about it they'd be able to spot a true idea from a false one and that the false ones will simply fall away. But it also implies that there's an objective truth out there. I mean, what's the truth of these human rights ideas? There doesn't seem to be any purpose. People will tell you that people should be building their own lives and own identities, but I'm not sure why I should care about that. And why is that good? And what's the context? What's the difference between, truth or falsehood in this case? He sees it to be even Maxim the Greek saw the development of rhetoric in people like Machiavelli. Rhetoric is just a form of power to manipulate people. You know, a powerful entity like an oligarch hires a PR firm to promote an idea. They promote this idea and enough people will accept it. And the agenda of those financing it will be accepted. This becomes the truth of the matter. It becomes ordinary. It becomes natural. The problem with all of this is, of course, most people don't understand the symbolism. These public discussions, these public rituals are saturated with symbolism that the mass mind doesn't comprehend. They're using language and with meanings and terms that aren't understood. The population repeats the official arguments. They create two artificial signs, very much like the Medici did with the papal elections, and they believe that's the same thing as debate. Of course, getting to the truth of the matter is not the issue here. And of course, since the whole notion of republicanism is to dominate those considered chaotic, those that have no other purpose but to serve the regime, the leaden elements of the population are really only good for service. We talked about rowing the ship for the marriage of the sea. The whole thing is based on this ignorance. It's based on forced labor. The Republican regime is based on forced labor, not necessarily slavery as such, but it has to do with people who never quite get out of the cave, in Plato's sense. Regardless, you can't use the language of someone like Jefferson, who would talk about private land ownership as a definition of freedom, and on the other hand, the foundation of republicanism, which is based entirely on negating that. The concept of the sea power comes from societies that don't have much land. That's why Jefferson's a little eccentric in that regard. And of course, Jefferson knew the Hamiltonians are going to win, and that's the end of the experiment. And he was well aware of this. He understood what people like John Adams were trying to tell him all along. That's why he never quite fit between the Federalists and Anti-Federalists. The nature of republicanism and Jefferson's idea could never coexist. The idea of the sea power coming from Venice and Florence is a negation of private property. It's a complete negation of any freedom, abstract or otherwise, because the truth doesn't matter. The very definition of the concept of truth is changed. The very definition of how someone, the very concept of cognition has changed. Anyway, I've been through these things before, many, many years ago. I wanted to go over them again, re-summarize them, and hopefully clarify some of it. Because without understanding this stuff, the nature of modern government doesn't make any sense. Certainly not in the West, anyway. Anyway, thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.